It's gonna buffer up for a little bit. There we go.
No, we're live. We're live 5 minutes early. Wait, I didn't get a beer. You didn't.
You really are going to get a beer.
Okay.
You need to warn me.
I mean, I thought the.
I warned you to warn me.
I mean, I said the specific words of, I'm going to go live 10 minutes early, so we have pre-show or whatever.
Just to hang out with the people who are here.
Yeah,
what a bunch of nerds. Who comes early?
I mean, these are like the cool kids who come early to the party, right? That's what cool kids do.
Oh boy, that's too much.
Stand in the corner to the back with their back to the wall so that nobody can see the gun.
So I'm drinking 30th anniversary cherry stout reserve for Bell's. And if I get through two bottles of this, I have a Backwoods Bastard, which is from the Founders Barrel Age series. Hopefully I won't need to drink three beers tonight, but I don't know how long we'll be casting.
Well, I'm just drinking a basic green apple Angry Orchard, so, you know.
Marcel gained weight. Yeah, and he got white. He was white, but now he's really white.
Whoa. Oh, okay, I am pretty white. That seems like a fair.
Aren't you guys glad you logged on early?
Wait, hold on. I got it. Welcome to a very special Brainstorm Brewery. We've got our guest, DJ Card Garden Kingdom King Johnson.
Can we pick on Corbin's toy choices? What, like sex toy choices? Yeah, he uses a cactus. Don't kink shame.
Oh, he's you got a bomber of Black Tuesday? That's tight.
That's legit.
Where's DJ's beer? I don't drink.
He couldn't figure out how to get a nipple on a bottle of Bud Light. Prairie Dance is legit.
Could be worse. He could be drinking milk, right?
So we pulled the questions off of Reddit. We're going to take questions live in the chat. It would be helpful. I don't think the chat's going to scroll too fast, but if you could at JJ, what's your handle?
Brainstorm Brewery.
Oh,
on this account.
Okay. Yeah. JJ's running the Brainstorm Brewery account. So just at Brainstorm Brewery, if you're asking an actual question, please don't abuse that. And that'll help us see it better. So we're just going to be doing this until we get bored of it, probably. Right. So
yeah,
it'll go out just like a podcast episode. This was us just salvaging our week when we couldn't make a Monday or Tuesday cast happen. Yeah, that's JJ.
Yeah, I'm actually on camera this time.
So. You thought that was Corbin? I don't know.
I think I'm pretty offended by that.
I don't know who should be more offended.
I mean, it clearly should be me.
Corbin, did you get really fat and better at everything?
Well, I didn't.
Did you get fatter and smarter? When did your eyes start working as a team? I'm not even drunk yet.
It's gonna be a good episode. Or
nice to meet you in Australia. I'm Dad.
You know what we need? If we ever start doing like Twitch or YouTube, like YouTube live stuff, we need sub emotes. And our sub emote has to be the sound of Corbin's knee just smashing into the light pole and the girl screaming.
It is a very, very...
No, seriously, we wanted... Corbin's like, oh, 8 o'clock EST? I don't think I'll be able to make it because Ben won't be asleep by then. I was like, have your wife do it. But what can you do?
That's what Corbin says, like, every night to Marianne, just have your wife do it.
Question, is Standard Red going in the right direction with the reprint of Shocklands? Yes. Next question.
Turns out more reprints are good things.
I mean, they're not going to do fetches, right? They're going to have to figure out another way to get fetches because they don't want them in Standard. They don't want fetches in Standard to the extent that they don't want shuffling in Standard. So they gave us that shitty what else, right?
Fetches and magic at this point. Like,
I mean, it's just shuffling. From a gameplay perspective, shuffling adds a significant amount of time to the game. It also presents opportunities to cheat, right? Like,
you tap a shock land or a tap land for fetch land for mana like I do all the time.
Mm-hmm. The amount of times that coverage has to have a "there's an Urborg in play" message on the screen. It's okay, people.
I had a situation in an EDH game a couple weeks ago where I got to tap Gonti for mana because somebody imprisoned him in the moon, and then I had Urborg and Cryptguest in play, so Gonti was tapping for two mana.
Exactly. That's pretty good.
So, yeah. So since there aren't going to be fetches, I think they're going to just give us shocks a lot. I wouldn't mind if they did it outside of Ravnica, but I understand for thematic reasons. I think we're going to cycle through like five or six planes, and each plane is going to have its thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think that's whatever. It's fine. I kind of like each plane having its signature dual land, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, it also gives them, like, the ability, like, something I'm surprised they haven't brought back yet is our Scry lands. Like, those were so universally applauded as, hey, these are just a general benefit to the game to have. It makes your draws smoother, it makes mulliganing less painful. Just seems like something that
it's a little awkward though, because they're all tap lands.
Yeah.
They can never be like untapped lands, so it's harder to build like an aggressive format around them. Yeah. So you have to give up aggro leeway in other ways.
Either that or you have to do what happened in the standard, which is go aggro but only in one color. So you have like a mono red.
We actually have questions. For DJ from Supernova, what would you be doing if you were not buying and selling Magic cards? I was actually a grad student for a mental health counseling program up until recently. One of my goals was always just sort of to do something with a psychology degree. I used to think about going into like criminal forensics when I was in like middle school, early high school, like CSI stuff, because I watched a lot of those shows and I thought that'd be cool. And then I went into school for a psychology degree with the goal of being like a mental health therapist or like working at a hospital or something like that. Then I got an internship at an actual mental health clinic, rapidly learned that was not what I wanted to do with my life. Primarily just because of all the red tape and HIPAA stuff and dealing with people who didn't really respect my time as much as I did theirs. A lot of my clients were like court mandated and that didn't really rub well with me. And then just also sort of one of the nails in the coffin was talking to my sort of mentor advisor person who worked there and learning that I made more than her doing magic stuff than what she made after she graduated while working at the clinic. And so that was sort of what led to magic cards.
Okay. Well, it's 8 o'clock. I think we can like get this officially started. So since it's going to be like sort of a podcast episode, why don't you give us a real intro, Marcel?
Oh, sure. Let's see. Well, welcome everybody to a very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. I'm JJ, not Marcel. But
why are you making him sound like Foghorn Leghorn?
I was trying to think of a character, but yeah, that was a
good one. This is me, Marcel. I may be an old-timey Southern lawyer.
I'm an old-timey Southern lawyer from California.
I may not know shit from Shinola, but I do know this here boy is innocent. All right, I guess it's up to me to do the intro. Welcome to our live Ask Me Anything session. This is from the ashes of two failed attempts to record the podcast this week. If you guys like this is the thing we can do more often in the future. We got quite a few questions from the MTG Finance subreddit. We got a non-zero number from the main subreddit, which is crazy because those posts were buried under like every single comment that got spoiled, plus every guild video, plus some dude whose girlfriend drew magic mana symbols on cupcakes and that got 900 upvotes. So like, yeah, it's remarkable that anybody even saw the post. We got over 50 of you joining us already. Thanks so much. How this is going to work is, if you have a specific question, at Brainstorm Brewery, just Narc just did, and we'll try to get to that. We have a mix of the questions for Reddit, so we're gonna try to get to everything. But this is just gonna be a little hangout session with me. I'm Jason Alt from Brainstorm Brewery, MTG Price, and Cool Stuff Inc., and I guess EDH Rec also. I'm joined by my guest, Douglas Johnson.
I like the pause before the word guest just to make sure you didn't slip up there.
I almost promoted you to sub-host. Accidentally.
Dangerous president.
And we are joined also by our tech guru, JJ, the man who is in charge of editing the podcast, making the YouTube videos, basically just all the behind-the-scenes stuff. Man, the mystery.
He titles them, he creates the show notes.
He did everything that we used to bitch about having to do. He does all of it. We did like we all individually did 1/4 of what he does, and then we bitched about it.
Yeah, but I didn't have to podcast every week, so there's that.
Yeah, so ask some questions in the chat. We'll try to get to all of them, but it's scrolling. We've got other questions to answer. We're going to try to get to everything, and let's just hang out, have a good time, and drinking an Angry Orchard, a 17-year-old white girl in the woods. Yeah. All right.
Hey, I'll have you know this is higher point than any beer I can get out here. So
Jordan Hathaway, and not only am I not wearing Crocs, I'm not wearing pants.
Which we'll never know.
Somebody asked, first question, my own disaster from the Discord. Please explain pegging to me.
Pegging is when the price of something is set by or pegged to something else. Like the price of a commodity is pegged to something else. So you say, well, the price of pork belly is pegged to the price of feed for the pig. So, one of those prices will go up or down together. Hope this helps. Hashtag butt stuff. The price of
feed at Earthbound is, Earthbind is pegged to, what if they make Surveil lands? That's probably too good, right? Like a scry land that lets you like dump a card.
If it came into play tapped, it's probably not too good. Like it could be a dual color land that like optionally milled you a card.
And aren't those just better than scry lands? Like universal, like that.
They are in modern for sure. At that point, they would just be better than temples, for the most part.
Did you guys answer Reddit questions already? No, we have not answered Reddit questions.
We're going to...
In fact, let's jump right into one of those. We have Percy Chang said, after listening for about 100 episodes, what's the cast take on the third reprint of Shocklands? Will they now stay low forever? Is it the time 2-3 months from now to start buying old Ravnica foils? Is it better to invest in third edition Ravnica foils as they are harder to counterfeit since they'll have the holo stamp? Also, they wrote Jason a wonderful poem that I will be sending him to read right now in the group chat.
Oh, this is the same dude who sent Jason the creepy poem before.
Yeah, so Jason, this is all yours.
You know who else sent poems? Fucking Zodiac Killer.
There you go. I put the
poem. I would blame Sander Vanderzee for being responsible for this, but
Ted Cruz is an artist. Do not disrespect.
Yeah.
have you seen that man try to dunk a basketball?
So to answer the question, I think individual tastes matter so much. It's probably a wash. I think maybe the holofoil stamp makes it a little bit better. I'm not sure how much the new printings are going to bring down the price of original Ravnica foils. We saw that happen.
The foils won't get touched at all.
I wouldn't think so.
It's the same with the expeditions aren't going to move. Those markets are very, very different. Yeah. Will they stay low forever? Yes. I mean, they stayed low forever last time too, because everybody sort of played the whole Kenny's and Beauty contest thing where everybody else thought that everybody else was going to sell out of Shocklands. So everybody hoarded Shocklands in 2012 and then Shocklands didn't go anywhere because everybody had 50. That was sort of one of the biggest lessons I think a lot of us learned was just the sheer size of the RTR print run compared to Innistrad, plus just the whole operation of like predicting what other people won't expect to go up instead of just going with the flow and being like, oh, these are going to go up because they're Shocklands. They're going out of standard. That's just what standard cards do when they're modern playable. So I don't think investing in Shocklands is a very good idea unless you don't have them and need them like 2 months from now. 2 months from now is a great time to be like, oh, hey, I need Shocklands. They're all $5. Give me my 40. That's a great time to pick up Shocklands, but not as a double them in 2 years kind of thing.
Yeah, peak supply is when you want to be buying, right?
Yeah, and you're going to have the same thing that you always have in Standard, which is whatever the definitive best deck is, those colored lands are going to be the most expensive ones. So those might end up being like $7 or $10, depending on how dominant the deck is. But the rest of the shock lands will probably settle somewhere between $3 and $5.
I did write a Simic letter, but it wasn't like the Zodiac Killer. I was mocking that that sorority chick that wrote that email.
Oh, that was forever ago.
Yeah, that was...
Holy crap. That was like...
RTR.
That's a deep cut.
That was RTR, so that was...
Who remember? Only the Zodiac Killer would remember that reference.
Did you know that, speaking of Ted Cruz, Gwen Stefani is older than him. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but Gwen Stefani hasn't, like, eaten children or anything, so...
She doesn't look like she's eaten much of anything. Next question.
What did you guys think from Rio McCoy? What did you guys think of Sam's Black Lotus, recent Black Lotus video?
I hated it. He interviewed DJ, not me, so I thought it was a piece of shit.
And I'm wearing a Lotus t-shirt, too.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it was good. It was, I think he covered all of the things he should have covered, and I don't have much more to say about it other than if you have not seen it, he's talking about Rhystic Study / Magic Man Sam. His half-hour video about the history of Black Lotus, I think it's real interesting, and he worked on it for months, so go ahead and give him the support. Like and subscribe, finger blast his bell icon, do the whole thing. Sam's great, friend of the cast.
I think Sam is the Reed Duke of Magic Twitter, in that like he's sort of the only uncontroversial figure. He's the only one who just nobody will shit on ever, which is a good thing. He's great. I love Sam. He's a good friend of mine, and I was super happy to work with him, but he's definitely the Reed Duke of Magic Twitter, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good place to be. As a content creator, it means you're kind of able to dip your toe in all kinds of things and stay kind of neutral among all the squabbles and drama of the Magic community.
Although he did retweet a Basic Planes recently. So, -1, Sam.
All right, what else we got?
All right, well, how about...
Is anyone trying to keep track of the good ones from chat? I'm really trying to stay on top of that.
Yeah, I'm going through chat. I'm starting with...
Just keep adding them to the bottom of our sheet. I'll start from the top.
Right. DJ, where did you get your t-shirt from? It's from GP Vegas this past year. You could buy them on site. I don't know if the aftermarket on this thing has increased. I don't know if it's on the reserve list or not, but if it is, I'll sell it right now. I don't care, but DM me afterwards if you're looking to buy a shirt.
How about this one? We've got... The CBS from Reddit says, what is the easiest way for players that are enfranchised but don't have any kind of storefront or seller account to offload dozens or even hundreds of cards, which are roughly worth a quarter to 50 cents market price? They aren't valuable enough for anyone to want to trade for them, but you can't just bring yourself to, they can't just bring themselves to shipping them off for bulk prices with the rest of the bulk. Sent from is a blue Game Boy Color.
If you can't get rid of them with an ogre box at like a local event, probably just blueprint them or Card Kingdom's buy list. Some of that stuff, if it's like 50 cents retail and you only get 15 cents, 10 cents on a buy list, like that's life. We just, it's 10 cents is 20 times the bulk rate. That's pretty good. Just ship it.
Yep. Card Kingdom buy list, ABU buy list sometimes.
Yeah. The blueprint.
mtgblueprint.com, just download the spreadsheet and then go from there. That's your best bet. Or just take it to a GP and bring it, put it in a box, sort it by price, hand it to a vendor, and then they'll go through it for you.
Yep. Someone in chat just asked, when's the best time to buy duels? Prices are going down. I would wait till they start to go back up a little bit.
We actually have a follow-up question on that from Reddit. C. Zarnik. 123 asked, duels have been going down a little bit the past few weeks, and many players entered a can-only-go-up market and are now seeing the surefire investment pull back. Do you all think that this is simply a healthy 10% correction back to like a median, or could there be a rush to the door, or is it something in between?
I think it's partial. Between. Right, because like I don't think it's gonna crash when everyone realized, oh, they're not selling at these new prices. I don't think it's a modest cooling off, and I don't think it's gonna be a race to the bottom. I kind of think a new high price has been established, and I kind of think that was a little bit like, I gotta sock away my crypto money slash, oh, this is a party that's going to last forever. I kind of think people realize that duels aren't the, you know, the new Bitcoin. So I think they are sort of cooling off on them to the extent that, like, people aren't just going to pay, like, 1 year ago's near mint prices for HP duels now. I think it's cooling off a little, but I don't think people are going to fire sell them either. I think they're just going to stay a little bit higher than they were.
I think part of it's just because it's the time of year. Like I think there is just a natural cooling off after GP Vegas where everybody's throwing around tons of cash and like that can't be supported forever. So I think now is a good time to buy duels. If you are looking to buy duels, it's definitely a better time than like 6 months down the road, I think. But again, they're duels. So
if I had invested in one duel, it would be Savannah, but that's just me personally.
Yeah. I mean, like I have a little bit of a different take and we talked about it a little bit before the cast, but like, I think that we've talked about duels only going up for a long time, and like the fact that reserve lists have kind of been a safe place to store money or like to just hold on your cards. But as people who entered the like Magic the Gathering game and the resurgence in Return to Ravnica and forward, a lot of those players didn't play with Savannah and didn't play with your other dual lands, and that nostalgia value that a lot of people get from playing Legacy and formats like that it's kind of waned. Like if you didn't play with those cards, like a lot of that value comes from the idea of, hey, you remember what it's like to play Magic back in the 90s. And I think that along with the reserve list is kind of going to push people out of those cards. And we might see a drop off in players that even want them going forward. Now, Legacy is always going to be attractive as long as it's supported, but I think you're going to see that player grace kind of shrink down a little bit. But that's an alternative take.
Next question at Brainstorm Brewery, Jason, or why did you stop the Frosted Tips, Jason?
Because they were hideous, and I only did it on a bet. See, people went to patreon.com/brainstormbrewery and they gave us money. When we got to a certain amount, I decided I would be Guy Fieri for like Halloween. So I had like 30 days of Frosted Tips and it was garbage. I looked ridiculous and now they're gone and I look less ridiculous. So I stopped them because why? Absolutely. That was like a 2-3 month period I couldn't try to get my wife pregnant just because neither one of us was in the mood.
At Brainstorm Brewery, who's the third wheel out of the three of you? Well,
three of us right now, JJ, definitely.
Yeah.
Corbin's not even here. Corbin is a wheel that's just like in the ditch somewhere.
He's a squeaky wheel for sure, based on his chair.
Yeah. That is one thing. At least this episode won't have any squeaky chair noises. So.
Jason, a couple people also asking what you're drinking.
Oh, yeah, it's the 30th anniversary Cherry Stout Reserve from Bell's right here in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I think the next beer I'm going to drink is a Backwood Bastard from Founders Barrel Age Series.
Nice.
Commander Time asks, what is the price point to buy Nexus of Fate?
I don't know how far below $20 it's going to get.
Yeah, like if you're playing with it, just buy it now. The amount of utility you get out of it over the next few months is greater than the amount of utility you get out of waiting, I think. Especially if if the deck that it sees play in continues to just be a deck, there are no new Nexus Fates being added to the supply over the course of the next year or so. So it's just sort of like a you might as well buy it now kind of thing. There's a chance it goes to like 12 or 13 from... I think it's still like 19 now, but like if you get 6 or 7 weeks out of playing them, then that seems fine. With the new mechanics being unveiled at William Peacock, what is something you expect to spike other than Search for Ascanta being an obvious one? So the mechanics he's referring to are Jumpstart being the Izzet mechanic, which is basically just flashback for its regular cost, but you have to discard a card. Surveil is Describe, but you can put the card on the graveyard instead of the bottom. Convoke is coming back for Selesnya. Undergrowth is the Golgari mechanic, I believe.
Yeah.
Isn't really like a do thing, but it's just undergrowth. It means that it will be referencing the number of creatures in your graveyard. And then the last mechanic is... Or oh, Boros, Mentor. When your creature attacks, your smaller creature that has a lower power will get a +1/+1 counter. Yeah. I don't think there are any super obvious applications of cards that will jump in price right now. There's like a crappy uncommon that seems good with Chain Whirler, but that combo doesn't really happen until you get Stomping Ground and Blood Crypt. I don't really think that there's no like super obvious build around Commander yet. I mean, Amara is just another Selesnya Tokens girl. We haven't seen any like guild leaders that you could build around yet. We don't have the new Niv-Mizzet or Elazav or anything like that. So I'm holding off on buying stuff right now.
We haven't seen anything cool. And honestly, like, it's so risky buying around Standard. I tend to just avoid it because I think there's like a 2 or 3 week period, a grace period for EDH. So like, I tend to look at that kind of stuff, and then the stuff that's like super obvious, you can fight everybody else for, but the stuff that's not obvious, you can really take your time and sock away copies before your individual actions are even triggering the market. So you can really amass copies, you know, pretty stealthily, and then 3 weeks later, you're holding a ton of them. So yeah. If you want to fight with everybody else, I guess like build around like Standard, but too many orders get canceled and stuff like that for me. It's
yeah. It's like wait for the next Jund lands thing. If the new is it Commander is some sort of crazy wacky build around, if the new Boros Commander is like a brand new Boros idea, then like find the things that work with that when that is previewed. And don't waste your time on anything else.
I got one for you. This is from Strickist on Reddit. He asked, I thought Gavin was the prince that was promised in regards to reprints. Jason has stated multiple times that Gavin understands what needs to be reprinted, yet he thoroughly screwed the pooch on C18. Has Gavin lost his ability, or did Hasbro/Wizards ruin the only good reprint avenue?
If I'm speculating, more happened than just them raising the price $5. Because they said they wanted build paths, and like that's nothing they've ever talked about before. That's a new concept. So I guess somebody at Hasbro is like, what do you mean you're giving them all the cards they need? No, give them the seed, you know, of an idea, and then make them go out and buy booster packs to get the rest of the cards. Or whatever dipshit. Build paths, what are they talking about? That's a brand new thing they've never said. And there's no way that was Gavin's idea. So I kind of think that he knew, and I think his hands were tied, and I think he just tried to be fucking positive. He was trying so hard to be like, look at all the good new cards, and everyone was like, boo. He's like, look at Estrid's Invocation. Isn't this the best copy enchantment that's ever been made? And I'm on Twitter like, yeah! And everyone's like, what does Lord Windgrace suck? Boo! So I feel bad for Gavin. Like, he can't say what he really thinks on Twitter, and I'm guessing if he could, he'd be like, yeah, some people at Hasbro, or maybe at Wizard said some shit. And maybe Gavin doesn't know that in a $35 deck, you can put a Worm Coil tier card or two, and in a $40 deck, you can definitely put two.
Yep.
They could have had a Bear Umbra, an Enchantress's Presence, and then like an Enchanted Evening in that deck, and three cards just like that in every deck, and it would have been fine. People are trying to sell sets for $90 now. Like, I kind of think that the Aminatu deck is going to pop because Yuriko's not going down like I kind of thought it might. That deck's just crammed with financial value. The Estrid decks, you know, I think some of the prices will recover. So really, it's like, do you expect Windgrace's Judgment to be a $2 card forever? And if not, basically you're getting the fourth deck for free, right? So you're getting a free Lord Windgrace, you're getting a free Avenger of Zendikar, maybe that Beetle that's 15-15 goes up, Windgrace's Judgment, the land. I think at $90 you're getting a free deck, and like that doesn't suck, because I think Aminatu could be this year's Atraxa deck, in that like it's the one that's like, well, $70. So I think the decks are worse than last year, and I think that sucks because they cost more. But I don't know that people at Wizards knowing all of this stuff necessarily prevented that decision from happening. I'm speculating, but I don't think Gavin just suddenly became an idiot a year later. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
from Efren Lopez, a serious finance question. Should you sell unplayable reserve list cards when they spike? Example, Quorum, Trench Gnomes. I don't know if you're trolling, but yes. It's a very short question to answer, but...
Sell into the dumb hype. Like, oh, yes. It's reserve list. It'll never go down. Cool. And in the meantime, you're waiting to get another buck on Quorum Trench Gnomes. Just take your deck tuple up and just go about your day. Really, just...
Bob Cahoon asks, are there minimum thresholds that cards must have for you to spec into if you haven't already? For example, X amount of decks on EDH Rick sold out of certain retailers. Jason, do you want to talk about like how the number of decks isn't as valuable as a different metric?
Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry, I was...
Basically, like, is there a minimum threshold for cards to spec into? Like, does it have to have this many decks on EDH Rick for you to buy in?
I don't... See, I've tried. I've done a lot of research of saying, is there a number cutoff? Is it 10,000? I tend to not use the absolute values, and I tend to use them as a ratio. Whereas, like, well, this was $2 and spiked to 10, and it's in half as many decks as this $2 card. So seems like that's a pretty easy case for that hitting 10. Stuff like that. I think it's one consideration. I think if there were a threshold, I don't think anybody is looking at those numbers per week more than I am. So I think if there was something like that, I would have found it, and I haven't. So I tend to use that number as part of the overall considerations I make. It's a little bit art. It's mostly science, but it's a little bit art to it. So I would put myself out of a job, I guess, if I figured it out, per se. But I don't think... Maybe 10,000 is a good number just to be like anything below that. But you got some cards that are in like 2,500 decks, but they're so good in that deck that it went up. Because something like Forced Fruition went from $2 to 10, and that's in maybe 3,000 decks, but it's in 2,800 of those are in Ekusar. So saying there's a 10,000 deck threshold, which makes it like a staple across the format, you know, that doesn't take into account your squandered resources. It goes from 25 cents to $25, and it's basically in two decks ever, get Rog Monster and Lord Windgrace. So I think there's a lot of other considerations, and I think if the number is obscenely low, like someone's like, hey, what about Paradigm Shift? I'm like, well, that's in the same number of decks as Sorrow's Path, so no. But for the most part, I tend to be like, well, it's the 22nd most played white instant versus it's in 8,000 decks. So I don't think there's a number cutoff. Just read my articles on MTG price. I kind of go into this a little bit more. I talk about this a lot. So I don't think there's a number. No.
John Lee asks, people always say they've never seen a counterfeit that wasn't obviously fake. What are the chances there are indistinguishable fakes floating out there in the market? Zero. If there were indistinguishable fakes, like if you could recreate a true dual land and add, if you could just... Theoretically, you could like make tropical islands like appear out of your hand. Capitalism would take over, and whoever found that magic recipe would have made enough to make their millions, flood the market, leave, go into another industry, and then kill magic. Like the people who are trying to make indistinguishable counterfeits are not doing so out of love for the game or out of some sort of desire to be like a Superman and save everybody from the horrors of not being able to play Legacy. They're doing so to make really, really easy money really fast. And if you get that magic key, if you get the secret recipe to just be like, oh, I can add 8,000 underground seeds to the market. Then you do that over the course of like a year and then like kill magic and then you just leave it and then you take your millions and put it in crypto, like whatever. Like you just, if that happens, then like that person is going to become a millionaire and kill the game.
Yeah, but I mean, the likelihood that's going to happen is pretty darn low.
Right.
I mean, there are lots of safeguards built between before that happens.
I don't think that indistinguishable counterfeits exist. They might, like, 15 years down the road. I can't say for sure, but we're not there yet.
I can't imagine Magic being around in 15 years, but I also can't imagine it not being around in 15 years. Like, right. If I got to get a real job, I'm going to be super pissed off.
Cody Goof. Gustafson asks...
Where probably Gustafson, right?
Gustafson? Maybe? I don't know. Where can we get Brainstorm Brewery shirts?
That's a sore subject. I screwed up the Teespring campaign. I'm going to send out replacements for everyone's orders. or maybe Teespring will. We'll see. There was it's Teespring is something we do periodically. Once I figure out how to do it correctly, I'll probably do one every quarter, so four per year. So you'll have multiple chances, and depending how this order replacement goes, we may have to get a bunch of shirts printed, in which case we'll have them on our store at brainstormbrewery.com and we'll tell you about it every episode. So cool. If you can buy them from us, we will let you know very often.
Brady Harrison asks, how many cards does it take for MTG Blueprint to be worth it? I don't think it's about the number of cards, it's about a monetary value, because if you're shipping like a medium flat rate box that holds around 400 count BCW boxes, like the four, hang on. Like a medium flat rate box will hold four of these, and each of these holds around like 500 cards, which means that a medium flat rate can hold a little over 2,000 cards.
What count? Is a 400 count box?
Yes, this is a 400 count. It's got the lid ripped off. But, and so I would say if you want to fill a medium flat rate box with around 2,100 cards, and like let's say just say that they're all worth like 10 cents, then that's like $210 or so. I think that's a fine number because the medium flat rate cost is like $10 or $13. I think it's $13.
$13 because we send the Brainstorm Brewery glasses seen here. Available if you're a $20 patron at patreon.com/brainstorm. Yeah. I'm just stepping all over your answer. I love this.
So yeah, you just but go to like
it's PayPal. $13 because we send them out in that.
You go to paypal.com/shipnow. So like losing 5 or 10% of your investment into shipping is fine. So assuming you're just sending 2,000 10-cent cards, you're getting like around a couple $100. That seems fine, assuming you just put like 3 or 4 hours of work into it. Yeah, that's why I like the blueprint, and like that's why I like biolisting nickels, and that's why I like all these boxes behind me are just like common uncommon picks that are just very easy to find in bulk, very easy to make money off of, and nobody else will fight you for it. No, it's not like you're trying to beat the next guy on the Facebook auction for a lot of Snapcaster majors or whatever. It's like you just buy bulk from people who don't want it, bulk from people who are moving, pull out all the nickels and dimes, move on, get some Netflix in there while you're at it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's like, yeah, you're making $6 an hour sometimes. That sucks. I'm like, I'm making $6 an hour while during the time of night when you're sitting on your ass watching Netflix, you know. So, like, I kind of like that. I would just be watching TV with my mouth open anyway. This way I get to close my mouth and then make some money while I'm just dicking around watching Ozark. Ozark season 2! I don't even get money to plug that!
I got one for you. Jack Bolt on Reddit asks, DJ, what, if anything, have you learned about MTG Finance since joining the cast? Any unique strategies or perspectives that Corbin or Jason, most likely Jason, brings to the finance world that you hadn't considered before?
Tell us what you learned from us, guy who pretends he knows more than both of us combined. Go on.
Well...
Oh, he's going to pretend he can't think anything. What a little shit.
No. When I came on the cast, I did so after having been a fan of the cast for like 3 years or so, and then also from having written for the website for the cast for a couple years. So there's a lot of things that I learned about from Jason and Corbin for like the fundamentals and the basics and all that stuff that the podcast constantly talks about. And I learned it long before I became a cast member. From these two. Yeah, so it's not like I came on the podcast as, like, some newborn wannabe financer and was like, wow, I've been thrown into the deep end here.
We would have hired somebody like that. We first encountered DJ when he was a writer for brainstormbrewery.com. People who remember 3-4 years ago, I decided I wanted to do content. So we were using all of our Patreon and our Gathering Magic sponsorship money from Cool Stuff. We were just using all of that money, like we banked nothing every year, to pay writers to have content, and then we like didn't even have AdSense, so like we weren't even monetizing the website.
I remember getting emails from Jason being like, here's your $5 per article, I wish I could pay you more.
Yeah, but like it wasn't about the money per se.
Exactly.
Like,
people, no, exactly.
a lot of people parlayed that into a better writing gig. It was sort of like, build your resume here. So I felt shitty to give people their first barely paid internship. But at the same time, we were doing something cool on brainstormbrewery.com. And BJ and Jim Casale are probably the two biggest names out of that project. And so DJ was probably our best or second best writer at the time. So that's why we brought him on. It wasn't just like, well, I'm a dude. I like stuff. We're like, oh, you like stuff? Well, why don't you replace Ryan Bouchard, who's got 10 years of MTG finance experience, and Marcel, who's been podcasting since the days of Monday Night Magic. So it wasn't that DJ didn't know anything. It was like we hired him because he had chops. We could tell.
Aw. Yeah. Liam asks, DJ, when you work GPs, are you employed full/part-time for 95, or is it more a week-to-week basis? I'm an independent contractor. I am not like working full-time at the 95 MTG office. They're based out of Delaware. I live in Syracuse, New York, and I fly out to GPs and need like on a basis that works for both of us.
Every time you like gesture with your hands, you hit your desk and then your camera wobbles, and it's yeah, it's nauseating me slightly.
I've got one for you from Dr. MTG. Corbin mentioned in the past finding a surprise Gaia's Cradle in his collection.
Humble brag.
He'd purchased.
It's not even a humble brag. That's just like a...
Hey, somebody else is dumb. Aren't I good at this? look how good I am.
Implying
I punched this homeless guy on the street and got his money, guys.
This implied that he didn't know 100% the contents beforehand. Is this intentional?
He doesn't know 100% of anything at all, ever.
Why would you go through a whole look, man? Most of the collections I buy, it's people like, I looked everything up on TCG Player. Here's all the rares. I'm like, yep, those rares are a dime, not a dollar. Here's the new number. Take it or leave it, and I will pay you the bulk rate on the bulk. And the bulk is 50% of the collections I buy. The bulk is where I make my money. Sometimes I'll make like 25% on the rares. And I'm fine with that because it's just like, well, here's stuff I need to stock my case. I know I'll get retail for it because people at the store want it, or I can just quick flip it on TCG Player. Yeah. And then these people that look up every single rare have like good foil playable. They got like a foil Fatal Push in their bulk, and then they're looking up the Shivan Dragon from the Welcome to Magic kits at the LGS. So. Yeah. I won't know what's in bulk because I'm not going to look at bulk. I'm like, that's bulk. I will pay you a bulk rate on that, sight unseen. Sometimes people want too much money for the non-bulk, and I just buy their bulk and let them deal with somebody else. It's like, good luck trying to get a buck for, you know, whatever bulk rare from somebody else. I'll just take your bulk, and then I've had so many collections where I just bought that, and it worked out way better for me.
I will dig through people's bulk if they specifically request me to at the shop. If somebody brings in like a 5-row and they're like, I haven't gone through this in 10 years. There's a lot of stuff in it. I feel very cautious about bulking it all. Like, I'll spend an hour with them, like going through it all and then make my money that way. But if I'm like driving to like a Craigslist ad or like some Facebook marketplace thing, or if somebody's bringing me something like we're meeting at like a Walmart or whatever, like tell me what you want priced out individually. It's whatever you don't want priced out individually is bulk. Where'd the chat go?
I got another one here for you. Pickle Rick Gone Wild asks on Reddit, why don't people park more money into EDH commanders? They may not be reserveless, but they won't be reprinted until the new anthology set is announced. Plenty of time for them to spike and for the market on popular commanders like Thassios, Tiamon, Sidar, Brea, etc. Also, thoughts on investing in Judge promos like Noble Hierarch or promos like Karn with the Old Border?
You get one question. One.
And your first question, I think, was a false premise. It's like, why aren't people buying Timna and Thrasios? I was like, they absolutely are. So, yeah, that's a good idea. And other people have had it, and that's a thing.
Yeah, and you should definitely do it, right? Like, you should.
I think everything he said about them is 100% correct. So, like, Timna is just getting paired with everything. Like, Timna and Thrasios were the ones that, like, it was Timna or Thrasios and X. Like, that was it. That's what people were basically building. And like Vile Smasher was playable in some other format for like a brief minute, but you know, for the most part, people know what commanders are worth money. And I don't like to buy commanders. Like people are like, what do you think of Jwara? They get, they're not the Jwara, the captain of the Weatherlight. And I'm like, yeah, I don't feel great about it. But if she'd only been available in a pre-con, yeah. So I do think that's the thing people are doing, and I think it's smart.
Yep. Would you want to touch on the investing in judge promos like Noble Hierarch and Karn with the old border?
Old border foils are good. They're probably fine. Next question. Like, it's just like a, sure.
But it's just one of those things where like, yeah, if you spend $100 on this card, it's guaranteed to be $120 in 2 years. So like, cool.
Yeah. That's like if you're going to play with it, yes. Like if this is for your personal play set, yes. If you're trying to make a bunch of money, no.
Yeah.
How far in advance do you plan trips to a GP event? Like a few months.
Not me. I just found out recently I'll be able to go to GP Detroit, which is in 2 days. I found out 2 days ago that I can go 2 days from now. So if you're planning to murder me, you're going to have to make last-minute arrangements. Sorry, Mike. Remember that guy? Remember that guy that said he was going to kill everyone from QS? That was really funny.
What? I don't think I've heard this story.
All right, that's an after... Pause. That's an after-hours. That is an after... I know what you're talking about. That is an after-hours.
Those are good times.
Hey, Jared Jouette, thanks for giving us a question to get away from this topic. Not sure how interesting you think this is, but would you guys talk us through how you get a consignment and or floor space at a game shop, outlay contracting, etc.? I think this is like a potential half-hour discussion, so let's do the Cliff Notes version, Jason.
This could be a brain bite. Most stores, I got real lucky. I found a guy who was doing a terrible job, and it happened to be where I bought my comic books. It's a store I've gone to since I was 12. We had a very great personal relationship, and he was not doing a good job selling his Magic singles. I said, hey, that case is underutilized. What if I did a thing? And I sort of just like got the idea to sell my cards there on consignment. It was great. I pay him 15%. It's very low. I'm very lucky. It's a thing where it's going to be like based on an opportunity. Most people that sell Magic cards do a good job of it because they make a lot of their money. Most places that sell Magic cards don't not primarily make their money at it. So if it's a comic book shop that's doing a really bad job selling singles, you might want to say, hey, what if I took this off your hands? You won't be able to get 15%. You'll pay 20, 25, which is, it's fine.
15 is more than fair. I think anything, I would not touch anything that is over like 20% really. Like, cause you get 15, the TCG player will take 12% off you anyway.
Yeah.
So why should you ever pay more to sell something out of a display case, then you are just like, I guess, but like the numbers there just aren't worth it for the most part.
How about this one? Malcoli641 asked, what's the worst hype that you guys each bought into and ended up losing money?
Some idiot told me to buy like 800 Splinter Frights. Stupid monkey suggested that Savage Summoning was going to be a great card.
I can hit $20. I watched Lightning Angel, a deck with Lightning Angel, just destroy people. Are you eating the cheapest? Are you eating like a 79 cent pizza?
Yeah.
Oh my God. DJ, here's the thing. MTG Finance is a lifestyle, okay? So you could be like, oh, I make all this money. And if you're eating a poor person's white trash pizza, it sort of undercuts. I'm drinking a $7 beer and you're eating a 12 cent pizza. Stop it. You gotta display the MTG Finance lifestyle. Show them all your fine collectibles in the background.
Next week, I expect you to be eating caviar during the podcast.
Yeah, why not, man?
You weren't in Toronto where we got dragged to a place where we had to spend like $150 on a plate.
Where'd you go? Chop?
It was like the fucking 60th floor of some shitty tower. Like, it was, I don't...
Oh, you're so mad. Here's the deal, right?
It wasn't bad food, but it was not $120 food. We ended up going to a place in Toronto like the next day that was much better, and it was only like $80 a plate. And it was a Spanish place. It was like Cava, I think, or something.
you should go at least one expensive meal.
Yes.
With your friends every GP. You should spend $100 on one meal, and you can afford it because you're turning a bunch of bulk into that $100, and then you're going to go get a nice meal.
Find some local hole in the wall or some like fancy, like well-renowned place. Go to some place that's recommended by Guy Fieri.
Because here's the deal. In 15 years, you're not going to remember any outcome of any game of Magic you played unless you like won a major tournament. You're not going to remember any of the grind. You're going to remember like hanging out with people and going to nice meals and doing shit like that. So I would recommend using that as a networking opportunity, first of all, because the people that have money and influence are going to those meals. And if you don't even care about networking, just like hang out with your friends, because those are better experiences. Like, this game won't be around forever, but just treat yourself. What were we even talking about before I made fun of you for the pizza? I don't even know, man.
Are any of you guys going to be in Montreal? Yes, I will. I don't think Jason will be.
Nah, probably not. I'd like to. I got the enhanced license, and I went to like one GP with it, and then haven't been back to Canada.
I have to drive through Canada tomorrow for Detroit.
Yeah, I got to drive through Detroit for Detroit, so that sucks too.
Well, it sucks that both of you are going to lose your cars and get mugged.
At Bam Hergler asks, Jason, can you admit to here today that you are the Seance guy and tell the story?
Yeah, so I had $40,000 in Bitcoin just burning a hole in my pocket. And I was like, what if I told people just to burn seances and forgot to log in under my Jason Eald MTG Reddit account? And if I were Seance guy, I would have made Ray Perez play Seance. I wouldn't have been like, can a pro do that? That would have been like, nope, guess what, Ray? You're playing Seance. If Bouchard and I had anything to do with that. That Seance guy was kind of a tool, but here's the thing. He knows how good Seance is. I got hype about Seance because I played with Seance. I'm like, oh, this deck just can't be beaten. It's so good. It gives you so much value. You get a zero mana Mull Drifter on your upkeep on their turn, and you get to block with it. That's amazing. So what are you going to do? It's not me, or is it?
I think the question that was originally asked was, what was the worst hype you bought into before the pizza thing?
Oh, yeah, Lightning Angel. I bought a bunch of Lightning Angels because I saw it just like smash somebody on camera, and hundreds of them. And that was after it got reprinted.
The worst hype I ever bought into was from this podcast and Ryan trying to convincing me that Soul of Ravnica from
Hey chat.
Soul of Ravnica is so bad, I bet none of you know what color it is. Yeah, exactly.
The chat is.
I don't see anyone typing it.
One of my worst hype buys is I bought it at a Deadbridge chant at like $3
and got out at 10.
Mm-mm.
Oh,
I
hey, that wait, that, that hype is from this podcast. Jared, you googled that.
But my favorite is all the ones coming behind it. Green, blue, white, blue, no red, green.
Mana Bloom after Theros was announced to be... Oh, well, that's what you get for watching MTG Lion, John Lee. That's what you get.
Yeah, I saw a Deadbridge chant go to like $8 on a Saturday, and then I found one store that had a bunch of them at like $3 or $4. I'm like, that's double money, baby! And then it was not.
Woo!
They came in on Tuesday when it had dropped back down to like $2. And that was that day I learned that lesson.
I was so hype on Deadbridge chant, and I still play it in EDH. So I also learned just how many mythics were in Gatecrash.
Wasn't that card Dragon's Maze?
Shut up, DJ. I didn't bring you onto this podcast to correct me.
Squishy Flap from Reddit asks,
Squishy
Flap
with two P's at the end.
Yeah. Is that a Rick and Morty reference? Can we stop with the Rick and Morty references?
Man, the internet loves Rick and Morty.
I mean, I used to, but the internet loves it. It's like the movie Fight Club. It's like, I liked Fight Club when I was in college, and then like every frat douche had like a Fight Club poster. It's like, oh, my favorite part of that movie is when I started calling people snowflakes all the time. I was like, oh no, you ruined a thing I like. So I think all the fedora dudes punching each other in the face for a thing of Szechuan sauce kind of ruined that show for me, which is too bad.
Well,
I'm picking Rick!
Squishy Flop wants to know if while they purchased roughly 1 million foil dust watch recruiters because Jason said to, yeah, and now they can't afford to pay their rent, what's a good avenue for them to sell their foil cards in order to pay rent?
There's another foil card with dusk in its name that I highly recommend going into. If you give me like 5 minutes to go to my TCG player store and list them,
yeah,
it might or might not be a card called Dust Mantle Seer, and I can give you a bunch
that
of...
That was the actual answer to DJ's worst hype he ever bought into?
I know, that one wasn't... I didn't buy into that because of hype, though. I didn't, like, watch somebody do
you
that.
You were hyped.
That's true.
That was your seance.
I played with that card and crushed... So that was the other lesson. I played with that card and crushed so many FNMs. I crushed a couple local, like, larger-than-FNM events. I was like, this deck is the best thing ever. I have taken this entire city by storm. I learned that I had to go take it to an SCG opener or GP and do well with it.
And you
I
didn't.
Could not do either of those things because I was like 18 years old and didn't have a car.
Yeah.
William Peacock asked in the chat, with the new mechanics.
Is that your real name?
With the new mechanics unveiled.
Does he spell it Peacock or is it William P. period cock?
Oh, wait, DJ already asked this one about Search for Azcanta, if anything else was going to spike. Never mind. DJ already hit that question.
So you just brought that up so I'd make fun of his name, and then we could pretend we were going to read his question and then not?
Yeah, yeah. How about this one? Jason Murray asked, why did you not promote JJ to host? It was a missed opportunity to dagger DJ.
I didn't even ask DJ to field or JJ to field questions tonight. He just started doing that on his own, and I couldn't figure out a polite way to tell him I just wanted him to read questions to us. So like he's acting like a member of the cast now, and I don't know what to do about it. And it was a real awkward thing socially. And am I talking out loud? We don't want to dagger DJ. We don't want to push him too far. He's got close to the brink a few times, so we don't want him to leave the brand angry and leak our secrets.
I'm just saying, if you look at a couple of my high school yearbooks, I kind of look like a school shooter. I'm just saying.
Oh.
So we don't want to push him too far. That's all we're saying. Like his quote in the yearbook was, I'm one step closer to the edge and I'm about to break. Which means he listened to Linkin Park, like, and he's 11, so how did he even know about that band?
Dana Roach asks, how do you handle somebody grossly undervaluing the cost of their own collection in a sale? Is there a certain... You just took it away!
You can scroll up! Is there a certain dollar amount where you feel the need to point out the discrepancy? If they're happy, I can be happy, but I will give people more money than they wanted if I'm still... There have been times where people wanted too little and I didn't look through and then went home and felt bad. There was a collection I bought where the guy had everything double, triple jammed into his binder and I made an offer based on that. He was happy with it and I pulled everything out and the cards behind the other cards were different cards. And there was a Grim Tutor behind a bulk starter rare. And I felt like such a piece of garbage and I didn't even know and I still felt bad. It's not worth it. If I'd done that on purpose, I would have felt even worse. So I guess it just kind of depends on what kind of person you are. It's your own personal ethical code, right? Like, I think that's ultimately what's that, DJ?
There's no right answer to this.
Yeah.
I'm just telling them, not you. Like,
yeah, exactly. There probably isn't a right. It's just like what helps you sleep at night? And if your business model, like, can't survive paying someone a fair value on their collection, then get out. If you have to screw people to make money, get out. You are going to offer them less than their collection's worth, but more than they wanted, and then you'll both be super happy in that situation, I think. And the closer you get to what it's worth, the better you'll feel about yourself. So don't have to rely on screwing people. Have to rely on putting your own work into churning the card, and don't pay too much on a collection, but don't rely on paying too little.
Don't light yourself on fire to keep somebody else warm, but like pay a fair value, especially if it, and don't just outright lie to people. That's just like the most obvious thing that none of you need to hear. But like, if somebody comes up and says, "Hey, this is this weird FBB garbage that I can't look up anywhere. I'm TCG player," and then you go to MKM and you're like, "Oh, it's like 50 euros or whatever." Don't like be like, "Oh, it's like $8. See, the regular one's $5. Like, don't lie to people. I don't need to say that, but I did.
I've gotten stuff on referral because I was good to people and I've had people come back. Rather than lie to people, I've been like, "Look, here's what it's worth. If you don't believe me, go ask someone else. And if they don't offer you more, come back." And that's
Like getting other people to be happy enough to the point where they feel comfortable sending their friends and family to you is the best spot to be. If you have to pay like $40 extra on a $300 collection, and that other guy's like, "Hey, I've got a bunch of friends who are done," even if he doesn't tell you that, like, I've gotten those collections where it's like, "Hey, this guy treated me really well. He pulled out cards I didn't know were worth money, but he could have paid zero on that he paid not zero on." We spent too much time on this question. You guys get the point.
A lot of people ask me about stand-up. I'm sort of taking a break right now. I host my own show, but I'm not really going to other people's shows. If I do it in the future, it'll probably be in GR, so I'll let you know. I'll tweet about it.
I assume you mean Grand Rapids, but I don't think everyone else knows that you mean
that. He said GR, so I assume he knows.
There's probably other people who are wondering.
Yeah, well, they don't care if they're not going to go see me. Right? If he just told me the name of the city, I would drive across the state. No, you wouldn't. My own dad's seen me twice.
You underestimate the power of our Zodiac Killer.
Dude, if anybody shows up to see me at a show, I won't want to go on. I'll be like, "Oh, this person wants to wear my skin."
I mean, it's much harder to kill you from a distance.
Your face will be stretchier if you're smiling when I stab you.
May087 has one question for each of us. Jason, I lived in Europe for years. What is your favorite country for beer, and why is it Belgium? Also, do you have a favorite brew in mind from Europe? I'm into wheats and blondes if you have any recommendations.
West Laveren, if you can get it. It's a Belgian Trappist beer. If not, there's that Roquefort. Yeah, Roquefort. They do like a 5, 8, and a 10. I'm not sure what that is. That's another Trappist monk brewery, but Roquefort's way more available around the world. West Laveren's like the holy grail of Belgian Trappist ale. That's very good. I think Germany has the best beer. I think the Hefeweizen is the perfect session drink. I know people like to drink IPA as a session beer, like a weak IPA, something like 3-4%. Everyone's like, "Oh, Founders all day." You're drinking a Pilsner. Stop it. I can drink the shit out of some Hefeweizen, and real good bottle condition German Hefeweizen that still has the yeast in the bottom that you got to swirl it to get it out. Yeah, that's my shit. So Belgium has good beer, and I really like Trappist ale, but I got to give it to Germany because Germany's got, they've got really good beer and they've got really good grapes. I love Alsatian grapes. So I got it. If I'm getting loaded in a foreign country, it'll be Germany or Switzerland.
Noted. At DJ, I need some good MTG finance advice. What is the most important concept you've learned from moving from a hobbyist to a legitimate vendor / speculator?
He'll let you know when he ever gains any legitimacy.
You got it. I thought about this question a lot. It's a really good question that May087 posted on Reddit. I think there's a couple things. The first is that there are multiple different avenues you can approach to fill a niche and be good at it. As somebody who's worked with multiple GP vendors, everybody does something a different way. Some vendors will pass on most foils, and they're just like, "No, we want competitive staples, non-foils, near mint condition. We'll pay the best on them, but there's a lot of stuff we'll just pass on because we're more about like quick flipping, constant moving cards in and out." And then there's the alternative type where it's just like, "I want everything." Not everything has a number specifically, like the best number in the room, but we just want everything. So non-foil pauper stuff, high-end legacy stuff, vintage cards, non-English FVB stuff, pauper, modern, ED, everything. And so sort of the role that I adopted was that I never want to say no to any card. I'll buy Pauper stuff, I'll buy Modern, EDH, like some of the shops around here are like, oh, we want your standard Modern stuff, but we won't take your bulk commons and uncommons. I'll take your bulk. I'll take your Force Wheels. I'll take your legacy staples. Doesn't matter what it is. I will have a number for you. And so I think the most important concept I've learned is just to be flexible in what you buy and learning your various outs for the different cards that you purchase and learning the different metrics of how you value certain cards, like using Magic Card Market for certain old school stuff, using TCG Player for most things, using buy list numbers like the Blueprint and Card Garden or Card Market to Card Kingdom. Okay. Card Kingdom and the Blueprint to learn stuff like Dothy Embrace and Palladium Mirror and like the elemental token from Battle for Zendikar. Just like having that extensive library-esque knowledge of all the different formats and all the different types of players just gives you such a huge advantage over other stores that are trying to specialize. And then the other sort of important thing I've learned is just having your organizational system be at its most efficient will give you a huge edge over other competitors. Like all the boxes behind me are set, sorted, and alphabetized for the most part. Everything has its place. Every sort of card has its own system to flow through. Like, oh, these are all garbage foils that go to Card Kingdom. This is all garbage higher end foils that aren't going to be asked about in the shop that go on TCG Player. These are all like competitive staples like Mox Opal Cavern Hierarch that I can't keep in stock. Those go in the inventory box that are easily readily accessible. Like that sort of thing. Just having multiple different channels for all your different avenues of cards. And that knowledge of like, oh, I can name all the Pauper staples off the top of my head. I know what the buy list price of FBV4 and stuff is. And just like, just being that sort of end-all situation where anybody can bring you their collection. Jason?
Yep. Right? Like, I'll buy anything. I don't care because like, you have various outs for it. What I like to buy is the stuff people don't care about. That's why I love EDH so much. Yep. Like, I love taking standard cards that EDH players don't care about from them for EDH staples, and I love taking those standard cards to the standard players who want those cards and don't care about the EDH stuff I get back, because you get 10-20% built into those exchanges, and you just try to move the cards back and forth between those groups.
Yep.
And you just get value every time. It's great. You're doing them a favor. You're taking stuff that would languish in their binder and go to like zero at rotation. You're cleaning their binder out of crap they don't care about, giving them stuff they want to play Magic. So basically, they took a binder and turned it into a standard deck for free. And then yep. EDH players, the standard stuff didn't rotate and just go to nothing. So you're helping them sell at the right time by getting the stuff out of their binder while it's still worth something. And you're getting them stuff to build their EDH decks. Most people are sitting on a ton of valuable cardboard that they don't sell at the right time. They don't buy at the right time. That's what our podcast is primarily about, is telling people to buy and sell at the right time. So they just don't do it. The way everybody does Magic is the worst possible way to do it. You buy right at the start of the set and then you sell at rotation. Everybody does it that way because that's what makes sense, but that's the worst financial way to do it. If you did it the opposite, you would make twice as much money and you could have twice as many cards for the amount of money you're spending. So, as someone is in my position, I will just take everything because there's somebody who wants it and there's something they don't want. Just take the stuff people don't want. They're trying so hard to give it to you.
Good answer. I like that question a lot.
Some of these questions were good. Some of them, not so good.
Eric Kangas came in. He said, popped in late, so not sure if this was asked. How many of the Guilds of Ravnica Masterpiece sets should we pick up? For those who don't know, he's referring to the sort of an SDCC-esque collection that was announced on Twitter a few days ago. You get, for $250 through the Hasbro website, you get 24 packs of Guilds of Ravnica, so a draft set, and then you get 8 sort of mythic masterpiece full art exclusive Planeswalkers. There are 6 existing Planeswalkers and 2 of them from Guilds of Ravnica. And the MSRP is $250, and they're a limited edition, only available on Hasbro's website, only shipping to US and Canada. Pretty controversial topic right now, and there is a limit of 2 per customer. But so I'd say if you can afford it, I don't think it's bad of a buy at $250. It'll sell out. If you're looking to get them, just buy it. If you're looking to flip it, I think it's a little riskier just because you have to find somebody who's willing to pay more than that for just those 8 cards. And I also think it's interesting because the way they said that they were selling it, you get those 24 booster packs, and then the 8 planeswalkers in the set are inside 8 of those booster packs, and they are clearly marked as such. So you're technically, like, buying... It's not like an SCC collection where it's, like, a box of cards and then you just, like, stare at it on your wall. It's, like, they're packs.
It's like a better booster box.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And if you take out the cost of the packs, you're paying something like $85 for the Planeswalker system like that. It's, like, $10 a piece for a Planeswalker. Like, really? It starts to make a little bit of sense.
That's 24 times...
24...
Yeah, 4 times 4 packs is like $96. So that means that you're paying like $150 for the walkers.
Oh, well, somebody else did the math and oh yeah, cuz you're right. It's like $4 a pack. Oh, okay. So it's $150 for the walkers, so that's like $20 each.
Yes. Or
like $18 each. So that's not great, but I mean for a master, I don't like cuz they're FDV foil, but paying $18 each on those doesn't seem bad compared to what the SDCC ones are going for. I like that some people are bitching. It's like the joke about the two old Jewish women right there at the restaurant. Like they're both like, this food's terrible. And the other one goes, yeah, in such small portions. I think it's kind of funny that everyone's like, it's bullshit that these are $250. Yeah. And the fact that we can't get them in Europe. Well, which is it? Like, are they not worth the money? Or are you mad that you can't get them? If everyone's bitching about everything, like, I think there's going to be a group of people that want these. And $18 on a planeswalker like that seems pretty reasonable. If you do okay on the packs, then that's like even better. So I don't hate these at $250. I'll probably buy the 2 I'm allotted.
That is if you can get through the Hasbro website. I tried to order the 2018 SDCC set. I wasn't foaming at the mouth for it. I was just like, oh, that's right. This is up and I'm at the computer. I guess I'll try to grab a set. And I was consistently locked out of the website, and it would cycle me back through and not process my payment. I'm not heartbroken about it, but it is just something to consider. Don't bet on the ability to successfully purchase these.
Well, and if people are like, well, these suck, I don't like them. Well, cool, they'll probably sell out, and probably dozens of people that want them won't be able to get them. So who gives a shit if you don't like it? Like, keep your garbage opinion to yourself. Somebody was talking about why does Wizards make such bad decisions all the time and not just listen to feedback from people? Well, because people bitch about literally everything, and they'll bitch about every possible conflicting aspect of it. And if all you do is complain about everything every time, when you complain, it means nothing. Like, this Magic community is the community that always cries wolf, and then Wizards is like, hey, we did a thing, and everyone's like, this sucks, we hate it. And the Wizard's like, okay, whatever you say, guys. And then they just do it. And it's fine 95% of the time. And then 5% of the time, people are like, this sucks. And they're right. They're like, they never listen to us. So these will be good. Try to buy them. Because someone else will pay more. Some dude in Europe that's mad he can't even buy it for $250 will pay you $300. So just get them if you can.
I've got a good one here. Kevin Anderson asked... I was lucky to crack a foil Scalding Tarn from Modern Master 17. How long should you hold on to this versus what is the ceiling
on this it? This is a very short question. Just sell it. Like, you cracked it, so you're probably not, like, buying it for an investment or trying to, like, you cracked it. It's a free $100+. It's just, like, it's free. Oh, JJ managed to pull up the
MTG 132?
That's cool.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Nice. So, I mean, even your market foil price right now on it, it's like 111 shipped. Yeah.
Like, throw it on TCG Player, get your $100 out of it.
It's going down a little bit from its peak, so, like, I wouldn't hold it if it's tailing down a little.
Just sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the Zendikar fetches, like, those fetches are a much higher reprint risk because they're overall... quantity is much lower than the cons fetches, so that's something like when they figure out however they're going to reprint more Zendikar fetches, they will be the first ones to probably get printed.
I'm gonna try to find a couple more questions.
I've got a few more in the spreadsheet, I think. So
I'm just trying to make sure I didn't miss any like actual good ones in chat.
Yeah.
There aren't any good ones in chat. Don't worry about it.
Alex Vervegi asks, if you guys are buying cards for your personal decks, where do you prefer to buy from? I very rarely need to buy cards from a personal deck. I mean, if you want to humble brag this, sure, but like I generally just have pretty much all EDH staples and cards in stock at all times, so I can generally just build a deck out of my inventory. If I have to buy something, I will generally get it on TCG Player, eBay, or through like Cardsphere or something like that. Or I'll just like put a shout out in the community to be like, hey, I need this card, I'll trade for it on like Twitter.
It turns out there's a bit of a controversy. Cardsphere is actually an oblate spheroid that bulges at the poles, and they're not being transparent about that, and I think that's bullshit.
Not a true sphere?
Nope, right. Not a true sphere at all. Because you can't make a sphere out of cards because they're rectangular. What are you hiding? This is two beers. I wonder what three beer Jason's going to say about stuff. Do you guys want to do this for another like 45 minutes? If, I mean, feel free to leave, but we're just probably going to stick around until like this runs its course.
Do you guys, Brian Summers, do you guys see the price of the Commander decks going up again more next year? I like the decks, but I agree they should have added better reprints. I think it's going to be harder for these decks to retain and increase in value. I think there's probably like one that does.
Probably Aminatu and maybe Estrid.
Yeah, but like one of the biggest reasons, like these, I feel like these themes are harder to sell to newer players than just Tribal. Tribal is like one of the best, easiest, just like, here's a thing, it does the thing, it plays the dudes, attack, go. It's harder to do that with like, oh, this is the deck where you have to manipulate the top card of your deck for other things, do the thing to like Bant Enchantments is probably the most streamlined theme of the decks. And that and Blue Red Artifacts, but like I think it's harder for these decks, especially at the higher starting price point, like I think it's harder for these decks to hit a strong number like Atraxa or like Marin or like the Markov deck or the Vampire deck.
They would have to be better, but like but all the Planeswalkers are way up from past years, so like I think all the Planeswalkers go up, but like if it's basically Lord Windgrace and Windgrace's Judgment in a deck, it's hard to see that even hitting 40, let alone like 50. I kind of like Estrid because I kind of think the stuff that's in there that's good reprints is going to rebound, and I kind of think Tuvasa and Estrid could make people want to buy multiple copies of the decks. Just I feel like they did a better job in years past of having non-theme throw-in dudes. Like, what did Tygame have to do with the dragon deck? Like, nothing. Like, this year, Yuriko still kind of relies on top deck. Tuvasa is still, like, an enchantment thing. Eriksmithies is basically the only one I can think of that reminds me of Tygame. So in years past, people
were... I mean, Zantia,
yeah, that's a good point. Zantia doesn't really have anything to do with that deck, but I don't know. I kind of feel like at the higher price point and with fewer good reprints than Commander 2014, it's tough.
Jason Westbrook asks, if you were each a deli meat, what deli meat would you be and why?
I mean, pancetta, because I'm delightfully marbled and I'm delicious. Tyga makes your mom uncountable, Jordan Hathaway. Yeah, pancetta. And if you don't think pancetta is a deli meat, maybe you need to make more Italian friends. I don't know what to tell you. DJ would be a gabagool.
Is bacon a deli meat? Can I be bacon?
You are bacon.
Everyone loves bacon.
Everyone loves Kevin Allen. Bacon. You're kind of annoying.
Chris Allen asked, Modern Masters 2017 foil, Death Shadow, got in at 9, short-term flip or safe long-term hold? I don't know what those are at, but if they're worth more than $9, then sell it. Death Shadow is a very like flavor of the month deck, where sometimes it's really good and sometimes it's awful.
I don't know. It's playable in Legacy, too.
It is, but like if it is worth more than what he paid for it, like you take your money and run.
Yeah, unless you plan on doing no MTG Finance in the medium term, but like... If you can use that money better, like just take your flips, just take your wins, save 10% for the next guy. Or if you're Corbin on your dual land, save 300% for the next guy. Just get out.
Biggest nerd here. What team are you guys rooting for, Bolas or Gatewatch? In the story,
Is that a finance question? Get out of here.
I am a Golgari fan, so I just want Vraska to win. In the end, I just want Vraska and the Golgari to win. I don't really care if Bolas died. Bolas is a pretty cool villain. I like him.
Doesn't that by default make you Team Gatewatch, though, because of Vraska and Jace being kind of like a couple thing?
I don't care about Jace.
Vraska makes me hard. Because she's a Gorgon. And she would turn me to stone.
Biggest nerd here asked, turn three Karn? Question mark.
Why are we only reading questions for biggest nerd here?
I think that's... Is that Andy?
is that a guy you know? You're fired, JJ.
I don't know him.
No, I'm asking if it's... It might be somebody I know.
Cool. All right.
It might be a local Tron player.
Are we out of Reddit questions? I'm super fine with that if we are.
How do you spec... Kill Jeffrey asks, how do you spec the new format between modern and standard that is inevitable? So I think he's referring to the idea of Frontier or some other...
It'll be called something stupid. You know, because Gavin's like, overextended. And they're like, yeah, but we're going to name it modern. He's like, fine. They'll name it something dumb. It
EDH. Won't be Frontier. EDH is now Commander.
Ugh. I mean, I see that. They won't get sued. Because, like... I get it. If you piss off the people that own the Highlander, they're going to send Sexiest Man of the Year 1996 Time Magazine winner Adrian Paul to your office with a katana to start busting shit up. He's like, I'm Duncan MacLeod from the TV show. And everyone's like, they made a TV show out of Highlander? He's like, it went for like 7 seasons. And he starts swinging that bullshit katana around your office, messing shit up. And you're like, okay, we won't use the name Highlander anymore. We're sorry. He's like, there could be only one. And then he leaves, and then your office has got replica katana marks and everything. So if you want to avoid that, just call it Commander, sure. So it'll be called something stupid, and there won't be fetches, because, of course, they don't want fetches. So what went up off of Frontier? Remember when all the tiny leaders people were like, Frontier, this will be different, and it wasn't?
Remember when Jace Rinse Prodigy hit $44 over nothing?
It was JVP, mm-hmm. And it was Siege Rhino, and
well, then... Siege Rhino didn't do anything, because I was mad that one didn't, because I owned, like, 300 Siege Rhinos, and that was, like, the one Frontier card that did nothing.
Didn't do anything? Okay, so then nothing did anything. Who gives a shit? Eventually it'll be a thing, but, like, those cards are so new right now. Can you guess the meta of a format that doesn't exist that's going to be largely predicated on cards printed over the next 5 years? Good luck. I don't know. I can't do that.
I
would need to be a better Magic player than I am, and probably a better Magic player than most people. Just can't do it. I can't predict the meta. But if Siege Rhino did nothing in Frontier, all bets are off.
Alex Ortlieb asked... Ortlieb asks, DJ, if you spend an hour going through someone's bulk, how do you consider your time in relation to the price you pay? I mean, I don't have like a rocket science formula where if I spend X amount of minutes going through bulk, then I spend X less dollars in a collection. I have a pretty good just like mental idea of how much my time is worth and how much I'm paying them for the bulk. I'm never spending like an absurd amount of time going through somebody else's bulk that I haven't already bought. It's not like I'll sit down with a guy and spend like 4 hours digging through 8-5 rows to pick his bulk for him before I buy it. That at that point, it's just like, hey, I'll pay you this number for these cards. Like, take it or leave it. But like an hour is probably the most amount of time I'd spend with somebody, like digging through a 5-row. If somebody completely new walked into the store and was like, hey, I've got these Magic cards and I don't know what they're, I want you to help me look through them, and I will do that for them. And sometimes I might not like calculate my hourly rate wage or whatever, but whatever.
You sound like such an amateur. You're like, yeah, sometimes I don't make money when I spend all day on a collection and I have to eat a Tombstone pizza.
SacredCat11 on Reddit asked, I'm pretty new to MTG, started in Kaladesh, got burnt bad by rotation last time, and was too slowed again. I'm sitting on 5 Scarab Gods, 4 Hazarets, 4 Chandras, hell, pretty much 4x of all the cards in Standard. What should I do with these? I don't need the money, but I still feel like I'm just burning money. Do I just put them next to my 4 Liliana, the Last Hope, and 4 Gideon Ally of Zendikar in my trade binder? PS going to Detroit. PS going to Detroit, would it be a waste to sell them there?
I mean, you've already lost money. This isn't a situation of like, am I going to lose money? By waiting this long, you already lost money. At this point, it's sort of a sunk cost fallacy. Like, you just have to accept the fact that you lost money and get what you can out of the cards. You're not going to gain anything by just putting them in your binder and having them look pretty. By you physically seeing the cards, it might make you feel a little better about the fact that they are still there and that your investment is still existing. But, like, just sell them and take the hit. You might just do better, like, throwing them on TCG and waiting, as opposed to just, if you don't need the money, then there's no real reason to, like, fire sell them at a GP when a vendor might pay you less than what you get on TCG.
Yeah.
But that's the answer to that.
If you don't have a TCG player store, you got a pretty decent amount of desirable stock that, like, your first couple sales are just to get your sales under your belt anyway. So
it's very easy to level up on TCG player.
Yeah, but like I'm just saying, if you're gonna lose money, you might as well.
Yeah.
You might as well lose money in a situation where you're applying it to like, hey, I gotta level up. So that could be a thing too. You could just throw those under the bus and instead of getting the same amount from a dealer, get the same amount but get a benefit out of it on TCG player.
Digital Connections asked, if you had to kick a person off the cast besides Corbin, who would it be? If I had a gun with 2 bullets, I'd shoot Corbin twice.
I would kick Marcel off.
I would determine one of our $40 patrons and then wait until the last minute and then tell them that we're not able to cast that week.
Ooh! Take that, Dwight Fry, you stupid idiot.
From Brian Summers, do you think Wizards should stop trying to push Brawl? I don't think so.
Nope.
It's a very, very good format for the people it is designed for. I think there's a lot of people on Reddit who are very like entrenched modern and commander players who are super hardcore into all the formats they're already in right now, who are just brushing it off as it's another Tiny Leaders. Yeah, but like Tiny Leaders didn't have Wizard support, and Frontier didn't have Wizard support. And like this is an actual thing that if it was a flop, I think they would have acknowledged that and recognized it and just sort of took the hit and moved on and made some sort of like public, it was an experiment. It didn't work out. Maybe next time. But, like, there does seem to be some genuine support for it. And I think that that's very localized. There will be areas where you can drive to this one city and there's like, oh, we don't play Brawl here. That's a stupid, awful format. And then you go 30 minutes over. Like, in my experience, there's a town 30 minutes from me where that's just all they do. It's like Brawl, Standard, and EDH. That's it. Those are the three things. Brawl, Standard, EDH.
So, like, if Wizards wants Brawl to be a thing, it'll be a thing. I would say they made a mistake making it rotate. That was a dumb idea, and they certainly didn't like talk to anybody outside the community about that, or we would have told them, but they did it. It's a thing now, and it's just going to be a thing that exists, and like everybody I know that writes EDH has a Brawl deck, so if you're going to go to a GP, there will be people that want to play Brawl. Just have a Brawl deck. What, does it kill you?
I'd argue that the rotation is a very over-exaggerated downside of the format because it is like a 60-card format with no sideboards that you need one of every card. So when your deck rotates, you lose like $10 or $15. Yeah. When I built a Brawl deck, the vast majority of my cards were either like trash $1 standard cards or like actual staples that won't lose value when they rotate anyway. Like Dante had a Karn in it, Karn Sign of Urza. That was in my Brawl deck. Like, just good cards, like Panharmonicon. Oh no, I'm going to lose value. Like, good cards that are expensive are not expensive solely because they are in Brawl. They're expensive because they're like good in Commander in general. I think the only cards you actually lose money on are stuff like the Scarab God or like maybe Hazara a little bit, or like, again, but those are one ofs, so you're losing like what, $5? Oh God. So I think Brawl is a very, very easy format to get into and also just to very just easily dump and lose, have a minimal loss when you get out. So I think it's a fine format. I think it's very, I've played games of it. It's a fun format. I don't think they need to stop pushing it. If it was actually dead, then sure, don't try to revive it. Don't give it CPR, but it's fine.
My Brawl deck is Kumena, and it sucks, but I don't care.
Mine was Gonti, and Gonti's rotating, so I'm waiting for the Golgari, whatever the Golgari Lord is, or the new Vraska, or whatever it happens to be in.
It doesn't matter. When you buy collections, you have so many stupid, like, oh, I have just like this one random rare, you know, from the format. Yeah. You can play Karn in Brawl, so, like, just get to your Karn. Like, it is whatever. Like, there are some formats I sat out of because I thought they would never be a thing, and I was just like, I'm too good to play Tiny Leaders. But, like, I don't want to sound like I'm advocating for Brawl because I kind of think it was a dumb idea, but, like, it's here now, so it's... Like, I don't make any money by telling people to shit on it, so...
Boom Boom Batty asked, what do you all think about buying into foil modern banned cards like Birthing Pod, Dig Through Time, and others with high EDH demand?
I like Splinter Twin the most out of all of those because it has the highest chance of getting unbanned. Birthing Pod is a card that could fit into a themed master set when they finally decide to put all of the Phyrexian mana cards into one master set. I think eventually they might just put like a master set of like, here's all our broken ass, like overpowered stuff, and just let people have fun with that, because that's sort of the only place you can put like Glistener Elf and like Birthing Pod and all these other degenerate things in one spot, Dismember, etc. But I think Splinter Twin is the most effective out of all those because the rest are just not getting unbanned. Splinter Twin's like a maybe. That card could actually get unbanned.
I can see Birthing Pod getting unbanned.
I've played Birthing Pod for years, and the fact that Renegade Rallier exists means that Birthing Pod will never be unbanned.
Ah, oh, shit, that's a good point.
I mean, Renegade Rallier is a worst e-witness, right? Well, I guess not, because it brings it to the battlefield. Yeah.
You get your Phantasmal image back, and then you copy your Renegade Rallier, then you bring your fetch land back, and then you say, like, no, you pod Phantasmal image and a Renegade Rallier, and then you just pass out from the value.
Oh, no, you get your Saffy back, and then you sack your Renegade Rallier and your Saffy, bringing back your Renegade Rallier and bringing back your Saffy.
So Bryson Summers just asked, how long till the next buy a box promo fiasco? If the fiasco is people bitching, yeah, then yeah, the people are going to bitch no matter what. It's a dangerous precedent, but like, was a $24 Nexus of Fate a fiasco? What if Nexus of Fate had hit 100? You got a free box. Did you just find a way to bitch about getting a free booster box, you idiot? Like, I'm sorry.
Not everyone's like...
I've been drinking. I'm heated about this, but like, I don't think it was a fiasco. I think that Nexus of Fate was the worst case scenario, and Mara already said on Tumblr that like, Nexus of Fate was above the power level they're shooting for, so that means every other buy a box promo is going to be shitty. It's going to be like, oh, it's a stupid card. I guess I'm not going to buy a box for my LGS, so congrats! You figured out a way not to buy a box from your LGS, you idiot. Now you got nowhere to play. Like, you did it! We get shitty buy a box promos now because you complained that you got a good one. We did it!
Do the buy a box promo without just having it be a false dichotomy of, oh, it's a Nexus of Fate, or oh, it's an unplayable bulk garbage rare. You can have it be like the Ixalan promos where you get a pack of cool stuff with limited edition masterpieces in them, and then everybody's happy. I don't remember a single person complaining about the Ixalan buy a box promos. They complained about the set. The set was garbage. But the way they did the promos for that set was amazing.
Well, you also have to consider the fact that, like, Mara went on and said that there are more Nexuses of Fate than there are any other Mythic in the set. Because...
No, he said there's less Nexus of Fate than Mythics, but there's more Nexus of Fate than Rares. It is in between Rare and Mythic.
Well, that's contrary to what some other information we saw.
Sure, but I mean, like, let's even say that's true and I'm misunderstanding it. Like, that's still, if it puts the rarity between Rare and Mythic as far as how frequently they are, I mean, that still means there are rarer cards from that set. Like, you know, when our M19 Rare or Mythic, what's the hit Mythic of the set? Karn?
Bolas.
No, Bolas? Yeah. Bolas is more expensive than Nexus is ever going to be.
I mean, also, Nexus of Fate aside, you can still not like the concept of having standard cards be exclusive to the product without, like, being available. Like,
yeah,
we've done this discussion to death. It's fine. Stop baiting us, Bryan Summers. Stop it.
It's Bryson Summers. Bryan Summers isn't acceptable. Bryson's like, oh, my parents want other parents to think we have more money than we do.
Jason, I don't want to hear it now, but at some point I do want you to make a scale of every president and how bad the president is. And that way you can just accurately on a scale of 1 to 45, just like nail what level it is.
Okay. Nexus of Fate was a Taft.
So he didn't do anything and just fell asleep in a bathtub a lot?
Team Jaska all the way. No, I don't care about fan shipping stupid planeswalkers. Vraska's cool because she's aligned with the Golgari, and the Golgari are the best guild. Jared Drua asked, DJ, this might be a little personal, but in general terms, how do you plan ahead, deal with the cash flow issues inherent in TCG player paying out twice a week with a week lag? I'm not going to go into the details of my finances, but if you're a vendor, you shouldn't have issues with cash flow. You should just always have cash available and always have cash moving around between accounts, and it should not be an issue. Like, if you're twiddling on your thumbs waiting to pay your rent bill with your TCG player income, like, stop.
Get better. Pick your bulk. You should be buy listing too. You should have a check coming in every week.
The only issue, yeah, I will say that in my experience, the only advantage to selling on eBay over TCG player is the fact that you are paid out immediately or close to immediately. If that is if you're not trying to be a vendor, if you're not trying to be the next big vendor on the scene and accumulate a gigantic inventory of cards, if you're just trying to sell your collection and cash flow is an issue for you, then eBay might be the better option for you over TCG player because of how quickly you're paid out on eBay through PayPal. That's just a thing.
Yeah. You guys have anything else? You want to wrap it up?
I mean, do we want to, like, I don't...
That's a good question. I don't know.
I think if we're still getting some questions, I'll sit here and answer them.
Tell us about the worst.
Skydive naked through Times Square naked or eat a jar of mayonnaise? What?
Which would you rather do?
Why would I skydive naked? I'd fucking die. Because if I'm wearing a parachute, I'm not naked. So what a dumb question. Would you rather die or eat mayonnaise? Mayonnaise is delicious.
I don't consider a parachute to be clothes.
It is.
Well,
okay, DJ, if you're wearing nothing but a backpack, are you naked? No, you're not. You're wearing a backpack.
If you're wearing a dog collar, are you wearing clothes?
Ask your wife. eBay versus TCG. eBay, you have to take fucking pictures of everything now, and you can't use other people's pictures. It takes me like an hour to make 10 listings on eBay, and it takes me like an hour to make 100 listings on TCG Player. It's so much easier to list on TCG Player. I don't even trifle with eBay anymore.
I'll use eBay for like the random garbage that you can't sell on TCG Player, which is like sleeves, like dice, weird accessory stuff that I get in collections all the time, like pins, all the random stuff like that. And what price point is it better to take store credit versus cash? That's a very situation dependent thing. It just depends what you're trying to get and whether the store credit price is better for it. Like, it just, that's just up to you.
Also, what are your goals? Do you need the cash to buy more shit? Are you using the store credit to buy cards to flip, cards for a deck? Yeah. Like, it really depends on your goals. There's no absolute way to answer that, but for the most part, I don't know, man. I will always take credit if they have something I want, because I'm just trying to. I'm not paying my rent with this money. I got other money for paying my bills. So like my magic money is for more cards. So I'll just take more cards.
Talk about the geographical effect on vending. I'm not really sure what you mean by that.
Do you think he means like people that like drove there versus people who flew? I think I feel like we covered that on the cast. So
maybe it might be like the fact that like East Coast generally has a bigger legacy scene, so that like East Coast and West Coast GPs, because they're coastal, are more likely to have a higher output of players. So like, I'd rather be working like GP Atlanta or GP Jersey over like GP fuckhole Oklahoma or whatever.
Whoa, it's not fuckhole. It's Oklahoma City.
Yeah,
that's a proper name. Tell us the worst MTG finance advice you've ever heard. No, there's no bad MTG finance advice, because like anybody who's ever made money at this isn't going to steer you wrong. Like, if the fact that you're thinking about it means that you're ahead of 90% of Magic players who don't think about it. So it's hard to get bad MTG finance advice, right? Like, it's... I don't know.
What's the fastest way to get a rating up on TCG? Underprice your cards?
Yeah, be the cheapest.
I mean, it's not difficult to get your rating up on TCG Player, I'll say that. It's just a very quick process to make sure that you're not somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. Any Brew Crew homie, GP Portland? I don't think so. Is there a GP Portland this year? I thought it had already happened. If there's a GP Portland next year, I don't know, because we don't have a schedule, but like... do you guys have a commander you want to... I'm just like rapid-firing these at this point. Do you guys have a commander you want to build but can't figure out how to do it? Mine's Drawlmu, Jason. What's yours?
Tygam. I want to build blue-white Tygam so bad. I'm just like, every build online is so uninspired. It's like, play all the time stretches. And I'm like, that's boring. There's so much value packed into that guy. I want to figure out a way to do it. And if I could have access to black or red, it would be amazing. But rebounding white and blue cards just isn't getting there. But I want to build that card so bad, because everyone's like, it's an insane commander for competitive, and I don't have a competitive deck, so I'll figure out how to build competitive Tygam someday. But
yeah, like mine's Drawlmu, just because you either play super hardcore Storm and kill everyone, or you're just playing kitty gloves and trying to win with commander, like combat damage with like Rise from the Tides or something, or Army of the Damned, or you're just a bad Kess. You just get your commander like smacked by a random burn spell, and you're just like, why am I not playing Kess? GP Atlanta, is anyone
Kess,
going?
Kess bores me. I liked Maricel better until I realized that Maricel felt like a solve deck. Because, like, your Quicksilver Elemental Hate Flayer Tree of Redemption deck. I'm like, Tree of Perdition deck. So that kind of felt dumb.
GP Atlanta, anyone going? I'm going to Atlanta.
No, man, Atlanta's where you go to get robbed. I was at GP Atlanta, and I was like, my friend Aaron Katz and I were talking on the bellhop, and we were like, what's a good place to eat around here? He's like, it's 2 blocks away. We're like, okay, we'll just walk that way. He's like, you want a cab. You white boys want a cab. And I was like, okay. Wow. We're going to die. We stayed, it was Aaron Sula the Godslayer, our friend Joe Welbis, and me, and like maybe one other person, might have been Bouchard, stayed in a hotel that seemed okay when we checked in the morning, and then we came back on the first day of the GP, and there were armed guards outside. Like, when we walked into the parking lot, they asked to see our ID and shit and our room key, and we're like, oh no! Why are we here? Atlanta is actually as bad as everyone pretends GP Detroit is. We stayed at a cheap hotel in GP Detroit. Fine. Walked a couple blocks. No problems. Nobody said, you white boys want to take a cab. Kobo Center, beautiful. The Joe Louis Arena, fantastic. Everything in GP Detroit's fantastic. Coming up this weekend, it's going to be a great time. If you weren't planning on coming and you can make it, Detroit is safer than Atlanta. Don't listen to people, the race riots in the 1960s. Detroit's fine. None of the crackheads have the energy to mug you. They can't. They have to rove so far away from their crack dens. They can't make it to the Kobo Center. It's too long a walk, and nobody who drives Uber is going to pick up a crackhead because they don't have a cell phone. So you'll be fine. Really, I promise Detroit is much safer than Atlanta. Don't go to Atlanta. Come to Detroit. Sell me your cards.
Okay. Hypothetically, just got into MTG and looking to throw my hat in the finance game. What's the best advice? Figure out how to not lose money first and then start working on how to make money.
Bing, bing. Finance is not the first thing you want to do in Magic. It is the third thing you want to do in Magic.
Yeah. Our recommendations for tabletop games outside of Magic.
What's my worst advice? Mortgage your house twice, spend all the money on heroin, and inject it into your scrotum. Like, what? What do you mean? What's your worst advice? What a dumb question. Have 3 different families. Marry a chick and then be like, I'm a traveling salesman. Then go marry some other chick in a different town. Then have 3 different families. That's my worst advice. Become a polygamist and have four women sexually disappointed in you at once instead of one. Like, I have so much bad advice. Are you kidding? Name your daughter Liliana. Like, that's a fucking stupid idea that I did. And guess what? If I have a son next, he's getting named Soren, and I don't give a shit. I hope no one fucks him ever.
Is it a family name, Jason?
Yeah. Sure it is.
You're 100% guaranteed that kid's going to be gothic.
Good.
That kid's
no one fucks goth kids. I don't want my son getting anyone pregnant in high school. Once he's out of the house, fine. But I don't want either of my kids having sex in high school.
He's going to be smoking outside of like the fourth grade classroom.
Yeah.
When he's like 24.
If there was a GP New Orleans, would you go? Oh, what a dumb question. Oh, would I go to New Orleans? Yeah. Are you kidding? If it was during Mardi Gras, no. If it was during not Mardi Gras, absolutely. GP New Orleans, that's a slam dunk. Here are the GPs I won't go to. Anything Mexico City or South. That's it.
How much on the Patreon to flip over DJ shelves?
What? That would take him minutes to pick up.
I don't know. Those are pretty big. Like, those are pretty beefy shelves. Like,
yeah, it's U-line, so it's pretty sturdy.
I feel like we're losing steam here. I don't think we're going to make it another 19 minutes. I'd like to thank everybody for hanging out. This has been the first ever live AMA, which stands for Ask Me Anything. You guys have asked us anything, and we've answered most of your questions, I would like to think. We'd like to thank everyone for coming out. I'd like to thank my guest, Douglas Johnson, for joining me on this live AMA. I'd like to thank Corbin for not joining us, because I really feel like the quality of our answers was improved by not having him inject his dumb opinion. I'd like to thank our editor, JJ, for coming on this podcast, handling the tech issues, handling the questions, and thinking he was a real person and answering some of them, even though nobody asked him to do that. This was fun. I think we'll just kind of ride out these 18 minutes by answering the questions that trickle in. This was a good experiment. I hope you guys had fun. This is a thing we could do more often now that we know how to do it. And I hope this doesn't feel like a poor substitute for a podcast this week, especially if you were expecting a tight 1-hour cast and then you got this sent to your podcasting app. I'm sorry about that.